page under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio and Sante Aesthetics and Wellness are proud to co-sponsor A Touch of Portland 2014. The event takes place Sunday, September 7th, and is a great way to detox after a long summer. Whether you're getting back from Labor Day weekend or decompressing from the burn, this is a great way to stay healthy through dance, foods, and multiple healing modalities. That's A Touch of Portland, Sunday, September 7th at Northwest 17th and Davis. Go to kboo.fm/touchofportland for more information on this event.
Robert Stage and Studio. Today we're featuring two different companies, one in theater and another in dance, that are actively changing the performance landscape in Portland. We'll talk with Antonio Sonera of Badass Theater and Anita Menon of Angeli School of Dance to hear about their upcoming productions, diversifying the Portland arts in Portland here on Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts, Stage and Studio. We just heard music from Angeli School of Dance's upcoming show, Murder on the Ganges. With me in the studio is the founder and artistic director of Angeli, Anita Menon. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome. And also in the studio is returning guest Antonio Sonera, co-founder and producing artistic director of Badass Theater. Welcome both to Stage and Studio.
Thank you, Tony.
When I first saw... both of your shows were opening around the same time, back the same day. I thought first, well, I'd introduce you to each other and also bring in, you know, two artists from two different disciplines and two different perspectives to talk about the sort of the multicultural sensibility of both of your works. And it's good to have you both here to have this conversation. So I'd like to start off with Tony, because I saw your first show, which mm-hmm. was Invasion, and it was a remounting of it from last summer, and it was honestly one of the most engaging and refreshing shows I've seen in a long time. And that was right after I saw Learn to Be Latina at Milagro. And man, you are just doing some great work, Antonio. You really are.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, just your directorial style, you really set a high bar for both of those productions, and Invasion was quite different from everything else in such a fun way, and a very meaningful and complex way too, in how you handled the themes.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, you agree. Well, there you go. But you know, the thing is, you know, you've done a lot of theater with Milagro, with Artist Rep, with a lot of different companies, mm-hmm. and so how did this come to be to form Badass Theater, which is basically you're the co-founder and you're producing artistic director. So tell us about how that company came to be.
Wow. Well, back in 2011, I put together a group of folks for a meeting. We just had a meeting, and I wanted to talk about what it would look like to diversify the landscape of Portland theater. And when I say diversify, really focus on people of color and women, because I feel like those are the two most underrepresented people in the American theater. And so I got some of Portland's finest artists together, and we had a 3.5-hour meeting, and that formed Badass.
I mean, that's pretty fast to do in a 3.5-hour meeting.
Yeah, well, there was a lot that came after that.
Yeah, but I'm sure. a lot to work out. But it sounds actually easier than I think it probably is, you know? you know, you're doing the sort of the Cliff Notes version of it. But was it difficult to form this with the good male-female mix? I mean, what were some of the discussions?
Well, the big discussion is, of course, what is Badass, you know, and what does that mean? But secondly was finding the work, you know, out there that we wanted to do. And Invasion really kind of exemplified the type of work I was interested in doing, you know. And for the inaugural production, it set the tone for the kind of work that we wanted to do. However, in Sans Merci by John Adams, It's a very different play, much more traditional, but it still covers themes of otherness, and that's really what we're about. And we said we identified that we wanted to be a theater company that explores and celebrates stories of otherness.
Well, I would definitely want to talk about Sans Merci, but why do you think it was important to the founding company members? There are about, what, 10 company members?
13 of us,
13?
Yeah.
13? Why was it important to them to have this theater?
Well, I think it was important to me to have them. Mm. You know, this was my brainchild from the beginning, and they kind of, I said, hey, I'm creating a spaceship. Would you like to hop on board and see where it goes? And I think that they all really felt the same as I did, that Portland theater lacks in diversity.
Well, I personally have that mission within me and my work as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm always fascinated by why someone else would take it on, because it seems like it's not something. And that's why I want to bring Anita in here too, because it seems like a lot of times it's sort of pushed. It's given more talk than walk, you know. It's given more, well, we should diversify, we should be multicultural, well, we should, but we can't, it's too hard, or we're trying, you know. So why is this personally important to you?
Well, being an artist of color, you know, myself, I really find that the kind of work that I'm engaged in is the work of artists of color. And when you don't see that on stage in some of our bigger theater companies, it gets discouraging.
Well, I think it's all about representing what we see in our world too, you know.
Yeah,
and that
more accurate
does
picture.
Get discouraging. And yeah. And it isn't just theater, it's also media, you know, it's also TV and film, you know. So it can get very discouraging if you don't see images that reflect your world, you know, your immediate world. So how does Sans Merci fit into the Badass Theater mission?
Well, for one, it's a play by a female playwright, and we had a lot of women in our company, and it's a play that explores the ideas of what grief and love are within women. And this play in particular explores the ideas of a mother who has lost her daughter in a very violent crime in Colombia, South America, and she comes back to talk to her daughter's roommate and find out what happened. And so these two women navigate their love and grief with each other in this very short period of time over this one woman. And the idea of Badass is, you know, we want to explore the otherness. There is a love relationship in this that's a gay relationship, and the mother has a very difficult time believing that her daughter could have a relationship like that. So that's where the otherness comes in, and that was where I was really interested of this particular play. And last year's play, Gideon's Knot, the Third Rail Company, it's the same playwright, and we really think that she's a playwright to be watched.
And the playwright's name is escaping me right
Jonna
now.
Jonna Adams.
There you go. And what is it about this playwright's work that draws you as a director?
Boy, she just writes beautifully. You know, this play has a lot of poetry in it, actually, because the name Sans Merci comes from a Keats poem, La Belle Dame Sans Merci, which is actually a poem by Alain Chatier, which it meant something completely different when Alain Chatier wrote it, but Keats stole the title. And I think that Sans Merci is one of those plays that she wrote that was going to be marketable for her, just like Gideon's Knot. She's written some wild stuff, but when I read this, there's parts of it that are very funny, and I've never seen parts written for women in their 20s that are so smartly written. And and all poetic at the same time.
And you have Drammy winning actress Louisa Sirmal in Sirmal in this as well,
yes,
in this production.
Yes, Louisa Sirmal.
Sirmal. And so you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts talking with Antonio Sonera, of the producing artistic director of Badass Theater. And Sam Merci by Jonna Adams opens September 12th and runs through October 11th, Thursday through Saturday at Portland Actors Conservatory. That's located at 1436 Southwest Montgomery in Portland, and you can find out more about their new show and their company at badasstheater.com, and you can also go to stage .org. Thank you so much. And that's badasstheater.org, or you can also go to stageandstudio.org. and ticket prices, Tony, are reasonably low, but Badass also reserves 10 comp tickets, is my understanding.
That's right.
for people who can't afford each show.
Yeah,
we
have a little program that we call Radical Hospitality. And we do it because we believe that theater should be accessible for everybody, not just the people who can afford theater.
It's also part of the mission.
It is.
So I'd like to bring in Anita Menon of Angeli School of Dance. And you've been listening here, and you've been nodding your head. You know, it's like, yeah, I can get into that. You founded Angeli in 1996, but it's been in the last few years that you've actually been creating productions that mix professional actors with dancers and creating these sort of large-scale thematic shows like A Midsummer Night's Dream. And now you've got Murder on the Ganges, which is sort of this mix of traditions of South Asian dance as well as Western theater and film and in your productions. What drives you to do that?
Well, when I actually grew up in India, I performed stories that I grew up listening to. And so when I teach dance here, the logical explanation is for me to teach stories and dances to the students with the stories that they are growing up with here in America. So I feel like that drives their passion, and I feel they can identify better with the stories if it's the ones that they know, they understand. So, yeah.
Well, I don't know too many young people who understand Agatha Christie, though.
Well,
so, I mean, I'm thinking, I'm sure that's something you're attracted to.
Well, actually, it's a journey that brought me to Agatha Christie. I first started with Red Riding Hood, and then, the plots kept getting more and more complicated. So first I did Red Riding Hood, and then Cinderella, and then Pegasus from Greek mythology, and then Wizard of Oz. And then 2 years ago, the Midsummer Night's Dream. And it's been a journey that brought me to Agatha Christie.
But why Death on the Nile? Were you...
Well, that was, definitely one of my favorite stories.
There you go.
Yes. when you tell these stories, I found that, the participants also, they went ahead and read the book, and they read, watch the movie. And so, they seem to identify better with it.
Well, it's interesting because you've set it on the Ganges River, of course,
yes.
And so it's Murder on the Ganges, but it also follows the thematic, story of a murder.
Yes.
Murder along, the Ganges River on this boat, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So the murder happens while, the story of the murder happens while everybody is on the boat, but the boat stops at various cities, and all the principals get off and go and watch the culture. And then that's a way of us to introduce the historical, cultural, and geographical details of the cities along the River Ganges.
Oh, so we learn more about the Ganges River by seeing this.
Exactly.
Which is not usual for a dance performance. So this is more than a dance performance. I mean, this is a whole entire story.
Yes.
So you held auditions, quote unquote, for diverse performers. So how did that work out? How did you draw people?
Well, we pretty much got students from different dance schools, Indian style dance schools in Portland, to come and participate. We have students with who can play the saxophone, students who can play the electric guitar, the drums. So we have a little band. And then we have Eric James, who is the actor from Northwest Children's Theater, who will be playing Poirot.
Hercule Poirot.
With the accent,
it's
yes.
It's a great, great part there. And it would seem that you're bringing a real cultural understanding with this mix of different dance styles. But it's outside of, I mean, do people kind of type you as Bollywood? Yeah. Do they do that with any South Asian dance?
Well, I do, our training in our school is very traditional. I usually say, you know, Bharatanatyam is to Bollywood what ballet is to Beyonce. Mm. So the training, it takes years to master the basics. And so most of our shows are very traditional, but we do also do the non-traditional. So we do folk dances in our productions. We do Bollywood. So it, you know, it's a great way for the students and the participants and the audience to know that you can bring in different styles of dance and, you know, still tell a story using all these different types of
dances.
And
it's good to sort of inform the audience of the different styles that there are instead of thinking of the stereotype
yes.
that you associate with South Asian and Indian dance.
Yes, and it also brings a community, different communities together. So we have, for instance, on the Mother of the Ganges, we have four dancers from Calcutta that are so specialized in that style of dance, and so we're bringing them in to show us that, you know, that specific dance and the choreography and it's contemporary and all of that, and that's still a part of Indian culture.
Well, what are some of the cultural themes about Murder on the Ganges that you're bringing out?
Actually, through my research, I was pretty touched by a few stories that came through that actually stood out. One was the story of the village of widows in a city called Uttarakhand. There were huge floods, and all the men and the sons that went out to work got washed away in the floods, and the a whole village of widows were suddenly left with the task of raising children and, you know, for the first time, supporting their families. And so when you hear stories like that, it really tugged at my heart. So that's something that we are definitely showing. Another story is in a city called Baroni, where there's a lot of political strife and killings, but the girls' soccer team has really unified the villagers. So they all come together, forgetting all their problems or differences, but come together to support the soccer team there. So the girls' soccer team has actually brought that community together. So that's another story that really appealed to me. So that's something we're showing there. We're also touching on festivals, the Holi festival, which is a festival of colors. So we have a dance based on that. Another city, Varanasi, is famous for its lamps. So we have a lamp dance, so where the whole stage is in darkness. And
a lamp dance?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
I misunderstood.
Not a laugh dance.
Yeah.
To me.
Oh, I know.
No.
Lamp. That's what I thought it was. Yeah. But that sounds beautiful. And it also sounds like it's a spectacle, but with some depth, you know, with a lot of depth.
Yes. So there are stories there that have meaning, and we're just not showing just the cultural variety. There's, you know, stories in there. That
real
mean,
stories.
Yes.
Based on real
people.
Real life
yes.
and history. Murder on the Ganges performs on Sunday, September 7th at 5 and Saturday, September 13th at 6 p.m. at the Portland Center for the Performing Arts. That's the PCPA in the Newmark Theater. And you can find out more about Anjali Dance at anjalidance.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
And stageandstudio.org. And so, Tony, in listening to Anita talking about her mix of cultural and performance traditions and the source materials and some the history that she's talking, would Badass ever consider doing a South Asian play?
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And in its season, wouldn't that be? I don't think that's done very much here at all.
No.
No.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to get my tickets to her show right after this.
And you'll come and see his show.
Of
there
course,
you go.
Of course.
I mean, you both didn't know each other before, so you're coming from different disciplines and backgrounds, but I would really like to know your secrets for drawing performers of colors and diverse cultures to your productions, not just the performers, but for the audience itself. How do you get people in?
For me, actually, it's the opposite, right? The audiences that I have are primarily of Indian origin. So for me, when I say I need to get a diverse audience, I'm trying to reach audiences that are not of Indian origin.
There you go.
So, okay. Which is why I'm trying to do these stories that will, you know, be easier for the audience to understand and to appreciate, and also give them a taste of Indian culture.
And that's a different perspective of diversity, right?
Yes,
there, right?
Yes.
There. And how about you, Tony? Because a lot of times, you know, the same people go to theater, right? So yeah. How do you bridge that, especially even if you have a multicultural production? How do you get multicultural audiences?
If I was able to answer that question, Demay, I would be a millionaire right now. Because I think that's the true question of the arts in general. How do we get diverse audiences to go? Because in a lot of cultures, theater or the arts isn't something that you regularly go to.
It's not necessarily a lifestyle choice. It's something you have to make yourself do because you want to do it.
And I think too that we forget that there's whole populations of people out there in our own city that don't go to theater because or the arts in general because
or to a dance performance.
And primarily, and this is what I actually believe, primarily because they can't afford it, because it's viewed as something that is for the elite. And you know, I tell this story about a friend of mine who is a welfare mom, and a few years ago I gave her tickets to go see Boleros for the Disenchanted over at the Miracle. And she called me up afterwards and she goes, "Oh boy, thank you so much. It was so beautiful. I loved it. I really loved it. People like me don't get to go and see theater." And I said, "What do you mean people like you don't get to go and see theater?" And she said, "Well, I'm a welfare mom. I can barely afford to pay the electric bill some months." And I thought, well, that's ridiculous, because theater's meant for everyone to go and see. And so I thought, well, now, you know, how am I going to make sure that people like my friend get in to see the... And so that's when Radical Hospitality was kind of born for Badass. And we said, hey, we're going to keep these... We're going to have a set number of tickets here available for people who just don't have the money. Because I think right there, that's the diverse audience. The people who cannot afford to go and see the arts. That's where your diversity comes in.
I know. Well, that cuts right to the core of it, too. I mean, people have to be able to afford to go on. First, they have to know about it.
Sure.
And then they have to be able to afford it, right?
Yeah.
And so those are two big issues. I wonder, though, is it if you present people of many different worlds on your stages, though, to me, that is a magnet. That can be a magnet to drawing a more diverse audience.
Right. And actually, coming up in the next season, Northwest Children's Theater has invited me to co-direct with them Jungle Book.
Oh, that's interesting.
So as part of their main stage performances. And so there we are going to highlight, again, different Indian classical dances, folk dances, Bollywood. So hopefully that will attract a big audience there.
And hopefully it won't make it, you know, sort of a stereotypical Jungle Book. It seems like they're really taking pains to be more culturally represented.
It is not your Disney's Jungle Book.
Not Disney, huh? Well, that's a good thing. It's actually the actual book. They probably start from there. And that's part of it, too. I mean, is it the responsibility of artists of color to think about diversity, or is it everybody's responsibility, you know, in any company?
Well, personally, from my experience, the artists also have to be open to experimenting. Several artists aren't, and you know, because they're very traditional in their way of thinking. So, open your mind and, you know, be willing to experiment.
What do you think about that? Whose responsibility is it?
Well, I think it's everyone's responsibility, of course, because, you know, do we want to go and see arts that are a truer representation of the world that we live in? Or do we want to go and see arts that are only a representation of one particular class of people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the real question. And but I think you have to get, you know, yeah, can you just do August Wilson plays and go over and see a Latino play at the Miracle? Or Milagro, or you know, can the glass menagerie be done with
South Asian actors? Wouldn't that be awesome?
With East Indian actors, you know, like how exciting could that be? Mm-hmm. You know, to have something like that done. That's, you know, a new way of thinking about how to produce with diverse performers. So, you know,
opening up the minds, right?
Opening up the minds. And then hopefully audiences would open up their minds and go and see those kinds of productions as well.
And I also think creating partnerships, because you mentioning Northwest Children's Theater and the Jungle Book and bringing you on to co-direct, how does one get predominantly white arts groups to be diversity partners? I mean, that's the other option too.
Ask
them, or do they ask you?
Well, I think it happens in both cases. You know, this last season, we have a thing called Text Out Loud, which is our reading series. And I was having lunch with Damaso Rodriguez over at Artist Repertory Theater. And I said, you know, I'm doing this thing called Text Out Loud, and I think it would be great to partner with ART to do a couple of those readings there. What do you think of it? And he says, let's put it on the calendar. You know, and he's an example of a new artistic director who's come in and said, hey, rather than be closed off to the community, let's be open to the community, and let's open our doors, and let's fill the space, and let's have it so filled that it's difficult to get anybody in here, you know, for rehearsals and so forth. But he's done a great job of opening his doors. So that's how you do it.
I agree. And I also think that it seems like companies are willing to work. I think the Portland arts community is very collaborative, mm-hmm. and very supportive of each other. And I think that it's just a matter of, as Tony was saying, Anita, you know, to ask, but also to offer, you know, yes. and to say, well, let's do this, yeah. you know, and I think quite often people do open their doors. I had the same experience at Portland Center Stage with getting an Asian American group of theater readings, you know, stage readings going too. So it seems like I think people are open to it, but they just don't know how.
Or they don't know who.
Or who.
Who to
right,
ask.
Right. So maybe it's up to artists of color to just start knocking on the doors, calling people, emailing, right?
Sure. I mean, I think that's part of it. I think if you're a theater company like Portland Center Stage or Artist Repertory Theater or Third Rail or Portland
even Miracle Theater has been supportive, Triangle Productions. I mean, a lot of people.
But I think if you're a theater that is, you know, traditionally does plays about white people, I think that you actually have to go and make an effort to seek out the artist and, you know, there's this old idea of putting together panels and...
I don't think that ever works, does it? Or all these diversity workshops, you know?
No, I don't know that they do either. But
I mean, how many diversity workshops do we need? Let's just do it, right? Yes, I get really impatient. Let's just do it, you know? Just hire people. Do the material, you know? I don't know. It just seems like we talk about it a lot in the arts community.
Yes, we do.
and what do we want?
And here we are talking about it.
Here we are talking about it because, you know, it almost feels like we take some baby steps and then we kind of come back, you know. I feel like in the 90s there was a lot more, you know, diversity in multicultural productions in some ways, and now we're just coming back to it in many ways. It's been great talking to both of you about this, Tony and Anita. Sans Merci, directed by Tony and starring four-time Drama Award-winning actress Louisa Sermol, runs September 12th through October 11th, Thursday through Saturday, 7:30 Sunday at 2 with a September 11th preview at 7:30, and shows are at Portland Actors Conservatory, 1436 Southwest Montgomery in Portland. For more info, go to badasstheater.org or 503-358-4660. And Murder on the Ganges, Indian dance adaptation of Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile, opens Sunday, September 7th at 5 p.m., runs again on Saturday, September 13th at 6 p.m., Portland Center for the Performing Arts, Newmark Theater. Tickets, visit portland5.com. Antonio Sonera, Anita Menon, thanks so much for this great conversation today, and break
thanks
legs
for
both
us.
Of you,
thank
on
you.
Your shows. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thank you, Janet Anderson, our engineer. I'll have the show later online at stageandstudio.org or on iTunes, and you can also like us at facebook.com/stage2nstudio or tweet me at @StageTheLetterNStudio. We're going out with more music from Murder on the Ganges. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
See the big Rock Candy Mountain. In the big Rock Candy Mountain.
Tune in to K-Boom Monday, September 8th for a special live broadcast from the Steam Radio Syndicate. Broadcasting from the tugboat north of the St. John's Bridge, the Steam Radio Syndicate has put together another great hour of storytelling with musicians, authors, and poets creating songs and stories inspired by the old American folk song Big Rock Candy Mountain. That's the Steam Radio Syndicate broadcasting live on Monday, September 8th from 7 to 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, K-Boo Portland.
Have a go. I'd like to be a gallery. Put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Brian Rogers. He's the new Executive Director of the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. Welcome to KBOO, Brian.
Thank you, Joseph. It's good to be here.
So, Brian, you just got started in your job, and as Director of the state's leading body that's concerned with the arts in Oregon, what kind of changes do you want to see?
Well, it's a very exciting time for both the trust and the commission, because we are about to engage in simultaneous long-range strategic planning processes. And the change is really about listening to the community, the people we serve, constituents, and understanding how arts and culture play a role in their lives and how we might be able to better serve them, you know, especially with both the agencies, commission and trust, to figure out ways to develop